This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. 1 hour of Radio Fury. Once again, we take you up to Mariners pregame show. Hopefully this time they'll carry it the whole way. There'll be no weather interruptions. Mike Blowers will join us at 2:30. A little shorter conversation today because of the one-hour show, but we get that conversation in nevertheless. And Dave, we'll talk to Mike a little bit about what we saw yesterday out of the Mariners, which I can't figure out if the Tigers are becoming the new Astros for them, teams that are bad that still just have their number. It's amazing. I mean, the Tigers come into this game 11 games under 500. They are not a good team, yet they own the Mariners, and they beat them again. A.J. Hinch is now 22-1 in his last 23 games against the Mariners. Now, most of those obviously came when he was part of the cheating Astros situation. But 4-0 this year. How about that?
I don't know if I'm buying it, man.
22-1?
I know. Well, Houston, I mean, they were better than the Mariners, right?
Yeah, but they're 4-0 this year so far.
Yeah.
How do we explain that?
On a crummy team. I don't know. I mean, it would have to be a pretty complex. And look, I don't know baseball as well as I know football. I guess, you know, I would say in football, is there that kind of, it does seem like certain teams have your number every once in a while.
Like the Rams with the Seahawks, regardless of how good or bad the Rams were.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, and I don't know, I mean, because a lot of times there's, you know, coaching changes and, you know, different. I mean, I understand that, but I mean, is there a specific style to the way the Mariners have played? And then also, you know, A.J. Hinch, over his career, he's played a bunch of different iterations of the Seattle Mariners, right? I mean, this is a pretty different lineup.
Yeah, you know? It's more. I'm kind of joking. It's more happenstance. I mean, the record is ridiculous. 22-1 out of his last 23 is something. But I don't think you can. It's not like there's plays you can steal. It's not like anything like that. Now with the Astros, obviously they were taking things to a different level, so you certainly could chalk up some of those wins. I don't know if they needed to cheat to win. to be honest, against the Mariners, where most of the time the Mariners weren't great when they were facing them, and the Astros just seemed to be that team. So I don't know that they actually needed to cheat. But when you talk about a Tigers team,
You're so bad, we don't even need to cheat against you. We don't need the buzzer or the garbage can.
We're putting the can away. The buzzers are in they're being charged on the battery chargers for the next team. We're just going to leave them there because we believe in our ability just to take you out old school style. You know, no cheating. So it's an unfortunate circumstance. I don't think anything's going on this year, but 4-0 against the Mariners this year. And again, they're not a good team. So it's just frustrating.
It's just a statistical anomaly, maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's so much repetition in baseball. You know, you have so many. You know, I did this podcast with our guy Joe Fan the other day, and he was asking me about certain players. And I'll say that, like, there are some guys that, like, really give you trouble. And then there are other guys that just didn't. And one of the guys, and I'm not saying that like I owned him or anything, but one of the guys that I played against that I didn't ever really have a problem with, and maybe it was just because of the way I matched up in certain plays with him, was Bo Jackson. You know, I have a picture of me stuffing him on the goal line. I mean, it's one where I'm not actually getting tackled by Dan Marino, you know. And then I just remember certain plays, and I remember thinking, man, this guy's an amazing athlete. But, like, he never, like, got me. Whereas, like, Randall Cunningham or, you know, a couple
Barry
of
Sanders.
Times. Yeah, Barry Sanders. He got everybody, though. Yeah.
Christian Okoye.
Yeah, Okoye. There was the one thing. There was an article in Sports Illustrated that said he left me flat on my back, which wasn't exactly true, but
I wasn't totally flat.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I was going through and watching some old games the other day, and I was like, well, maybe it was a little bit exaggerated. But, I mean, I'd say, you know, he probably won more battles than I did. You know, so some guys, you know, as far as a player goes, you have certain matchups that, you know, are tough for you and not, but this one's so different just because it's obviously to me a different game, but I mean, this number 22-1 and they're different players. And yeah, it just sucks though because Detroit stinks.
Yeah, they improved to 25-35 after the game yesterday. So we'll see. And listen, when your pitcher gets off to the start that Marco did, that doesn't help. I mean, he gives up early runs. He ends up going four innings, gives up five hits, four earned runs, walked just one, struck out two, but just not a great start to the game. He did turn things around before he left. And cut number one, Scott Service, just talking about his outing overall.
Yeah, certainly, you know, Marco wasn't quite as sharp tonight as he was last time out. And that's going to happen. You know, it's been a month since he's been on a regular turn or whatnot. But, you know, thought he got it going better there in the third and the fourth inning. Tonight.
Yeah, so, you know, bad start. Got it turned around. Feeling better about what you saw before he left. And hopefully that it was just disappointing based on his first start. Right, we talked a lot about that yesterday. The idea that he went an entire month, did not throw a pitch in the month of May for the club, and then comes in June, first start out there, incredibly efficient, four innings, 50 pitches, looked really good, and then so you expected him to take that next step, and just felt like a bit of a step back. I mean, not a panic move, but there was an expectation of being, you know, topping what he did in his previous start, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I mean, you expected to see an incremental step there, and it went the wrong way. I mean, you know, the one good news is, I mean, early on it was really bothering me because I think he had seven walks all of last year and, what, 11 outings, 10 outings? And, you know, and early on, you know, his first game, he walked three, then he walked two, you know, but he only walked one last night, but the earned runs much worse than his last outing, and, you know, threw a lot more pitches. And yeah, it was, I don't know, what do we make of Marco Gonzalez's year? It certainly hasn't been, I mean, the injury set him back, but it started off rough and then he started to fix it. And then he got hurt and, you know, and I thought, oh, great, man, against Oakland. Okay, we'll see that. I mean, I'm not trying to panic or anything, but, you know, now you look at this outing against, like you said, a team that's not very good. And, yeah, it makes you I'm kind of like sitting there going, well, you know, what's going to happen the rest of the way with Marco Gonzalez? I'm not losing faith in him or anything, but it's certainly, you know, not what we expected from him.
Yeah, it's been disjointed, to say the very least. So maybe he's just had a hard time, you know, finding a rhythm at the beginning of the season. Then he starts to find it. He gets hurt. He comes back. Sort of teased us with the first outing, got this one. I don't think anybody's truly panicking. It was just more of a disappointment. Like, oh, I thought he'd take that next step and look just a little bit better than he even did the first time, which was great. But all right, we'll see what he does in the next one. I mean, there's not a huge concern there. The bigger concern was that the team went 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. They just didn't hit very well. I mean, they put up three runs, but you had a lot of opportunity. You stranded nine. Whereas, you know, they went 4-for-10. They batted 400 with runners in scoring position. So they just, Tigers outplayed them. It was just one of those games. We'll see what they do. But a couple of the highlights, I guess. J.P. Crawford with three hits, 3-for-4, now hitting .273, which on this team is absolutely stellar. And he's starting to hit the ball hard. You could just see a different level of confidence with him in that leadoff spot. So great once again to get production out of him. And then the other guy that had multiple hits, Taylor Trammell, who's batting .280 since he's been back with .331 on base percentage, I think. It goes 2-for-4 last night. Overall average doesn't look great, but he was hitting .157 when he left. So he's building it back up at .185 now. So, yeah, Bryce, and then Shed Long, give him credit. We haven't seen him in forever, kind of forgot about the guy. It comes in with a double, scores a run, goes 1-for-4 on the night. So good to see that as well.
Yeah. I always got to tell my Shed Long story that we interviewed him down there, Bob. And after the interview was over, he just like hung with us during the break and was just chatting. And we were like, hey, you can go, man. And he was just like hanging out with us and just having conversations and telling us that he doesn't like to drink water. And yeah, all these interesting things about him. But yeah, always rooting for that kid. But he's been part of that list, you know, the IL. And then, oh, by the way, our boy, remember we were just talking about Ty France and how it seems like he gets hit more than anybody else? Yeah, got hit twice last night.
Yeah.
So he's at eight. He's trying to catch Canna.
Yeah.
You know, but
I don't think opposing pitchers have a problem with France, as far as I know. Canna makes sense because he's got that face. But France, I think it's just bad luck.
Maybe France has that face. If you ask pitchers, you know, they might say that. But I remember in the Twin series, there was one that went right at his head, and he had to dive out. And he got up and actually said something to that. He mouthed something to the pitcher. And I remember thinking, man, are we going to get a charge the mound here? We haven't had a fight in, what, 20 years?
Yeah, something like that. Everybody's pointing to when Richie Sexson was here. It was like, I don't know, what was it, 16 years ago, 12 years? It's been way too long. A fight is long overdue here.
Well, and then, you know, we're talking about matchups and everything, too. I told you last time we played the Detroit, I was like, I put down, I hate with two A's, Eric Haase, H-A-S-E, his name. I mean, he went 2-for-4 last night with a home run in the first series, 4 hits, 2 home runs, 3 RBIs, had 2 RBIs last night. You know, I mean, maybe for him individually, maybe it's not A.J. Finch. Maybe it's Eric Haase, and I'm not sure what kind of player he's going to be, but it seems like he has had a ton of success. I think he's batting like 375 against the Mariners this year.
Well, he's got 3 of his 8 home runs have come against the Mariners. So, he seems, it's sort of like Seager against the Rangers in Texas. He tends to do well for whatever reason, and Haase is having his way with the Mariners, hitting 278 on the season after, as you point out, a 2-for-4 night last night. The Mariners do get some good news, though, as it pertains to the bullpen. Kendall Graveman pitched 1 inning at Tacoma, 1 hit, 1 run, 2 strikeouts,
what?
A walk. Yeah.
He gave up a run, Bob?
I know.
You're kidding me.
That didn't count, though. Doesn't count at Triple A. He's still got no ERA here.
Maybe he just wanted to see what it felt like, you know.
Yeah, I think he's working things out. He's trying to get his rhythm back. And then Cal Raleigh, is this accurate? Is it really an 18-game hit streak?
Wow.
Is that right? This is not a typo, Lefko, that he's in the midst of an 18-game hit streak.
All right, look. Well, I knew batting. I put a guy's weight at like 290 for a receiver, but yes, that's
he's
accurate.
Batting 356.
18 games is
batting
very accurate.
Average down there. So,
well, you know, Lefko tells us there's an offensive lineman playing receiver. Everything's suspect after that.
What are you talking about? What's that?
When he said that receiver, he had him listed as what was the weight he had? Like 260
right.
or 240?
It might have been like 290. I don't know.
290, 290-pound receiver.
Instead of like 206, 209?
Yeah. But, I mean, geez, 18-game hit streak. You know, a lot of their problems have been solved since Torrens went down. Tom Murphy's starting to pick up the pace. He's not killing it, but he's certainly picked up his pace. He's a decent defensive catcher. I wouldn't say he's stellar, but he's better than Torrens was. And Godoy does all right. We'll see what they do. I don't know that there's an urgency to get Cal Raleigh up here, you know, like there was when they brought Godoy up, because it was just, I mean, that was when Murphy was at his absolute bottom ebb right there, the ebb and flow. He was struggling, and Torrens couldn't do anything behind the plate or at the plate, so it was much more damaging at that point. So we'll see what goes on with Cal Raleigh, but great to see somebody that's one of the many prospects that we look at as part of the core. Yeah. Down there killing it, and we'll see what Kelnick does down there. I know he had a sack fly last night, so we'll see how he tracks down there. But
Dylan Thomas, too, speaking of AAA, coming into the lineup tonight, playing right field. Looks like Haniger's going to DH.
His first shot at the major leagues at 28 years old.
28, yeah. I talked about that yesterday, but in case anybody didn't hear, I was on the Zoom call and watched him get really choked up about making it to the big leagues finally. I mean, can you imagine a guy grinding it out for that long, 28 years old? He was talking about how he told his little girl, "Daddy's in the big leagues now."
How cool is that?
So, I mean, so cool.
Well, the Mariners for him. The Mariners saw that before. They saw that with Austin Nola. Remember, he was just a career minor leaguer, finally got a shot up here and turned it into something really good, to where he became a valuable trade piece to the San Diego Padres. You get Ty France, Trammell. So, yeah, we've seen that story before. Hopefully it turns out the same way for this guy. I mean,
you forgot to mention Torrens in that trade too, Bob.
There's a reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not dazzled with that part of the trade. The other two, I like. Torrens, not so much. Not so much. But one story we didn't get a chance to get to yesterday because of time constraints, but I would imagine everybody has heard this clip from Garrett Cole by now.
Yeah.
And again, this story just continues to gain steam in terms of pitchers using a specific substance to get that spin rate. It's called spider tack. And He was asked, here's cut number two. For those of you that have not heard this, Gerrit Cole was asked directly if he uses spider tack on baseballs. And it's a bad, it is really one of the worst responses I've heard in a sort of gotcha question. Here's how he responded to that.
And have you ever used spider tack while pitching?
I don't know. I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, there are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players.
Huh? I mean, that is, when you pause like that, Dave, as long as he did with, I don't, and then 1-1000, 2-1, just say yes. You're saying yes there, because if it was no, you would have just come out and said, no, I've never used it. Have I used rosin and sunscreen? Maybe that's made its way into my mitt at a time or two onto the ball. But I mean, that's worse than just coming out and going, yeah, I've used it and everybody has. I'm certainly not alone in this, or whatever he could have said that would have been better than that stammering, uncomfortable silence of I don't, that's a yes. He absolutely has. That's what that means.
You know how you talk about how, people's approach at the plate, like you go up there with a plan. He had no approach here.
He was buckled.
I got to say, man, and, you know, Dave Pearson, who, you know, runs the media department for the Seahawks. I mean, there are guys that say things that he can't control, but I don't think anybody ever goes up there unprepared. And, you know, so I would say, where was their media guy on this one? And then just for him, I mean, just even without the media guy, you know, have a plan. I mean, you're pretty sure you're going to get asked about this. Or, I mean, maybe that was he thought, nobody's going to ask us about this for a long time, so, you know, we'll have some kind of a canned response or whatever. I mean, I guess I would just say, yeah, I really don't want to talk about that right now. I'm here to talk about something else. But, I mean, that was awful.
It was brutal. It was so bad that, I mean, if he's, I guess on an extreme level, I can appreciate that he didn't lie. He could have come out and said, no, I've never heard of that. Or no,
I'd have rather heard him lie, Bob.
That was terrible. That was so bad. That was worse than just a flat out, yeah, I have. I mean, silence. I don't know how to answer that.
It kind of reminded me of, Ricky Bobby, where he's like, I don't know where to put my hands.
Talladega Nights.
Yeah, Talladega Nights. It kind of sounded like that, but I mean, it was a totally different situation where he just was totally caught by surprise. And it's just weird to me that, like, if you're a pitcher, that's the big news right now. And how about this, Bob? I want to say it was May 25th, the first time we even started talking about this. So maybe 2 weeks ago, before they played San Diego, you know, we talked to the play-by-play, Jesse Agler. Everybody remembers his name now. And, you know, that's when we first, you know, heard him talking about it. You mentioned MLB Network. They weren't bringing it up. And, you know, you weren't hearing it anywhere. And now all of a sudden, like, they're coming down hard on this thing. And that was big news that entire week leading up to that interview that we had, was that there were six shutouts. Or no hitters, I mean, and then you had, you know, hits, or the more strikeouts than hits over the last 3 years. What's going on? Are we going to move the mound back? And then all of a sudden this comes out and it's just catching fire right now. And I don't know how bad this is going to make some of these guys look. Have you thought about, like, the Mariner staff and what you think? Who do you think has been using it or anything?
I don't know. I mean, I've got to believe somebody's dabbled. I don't think because they're the Mariners that they're above it. You know, if every pitcher is using it, or it's, you know, just common use, everybody knows you're using it, I guess maybe you're doing a disservice to your team by not using it on some level. I mean, I don't think guys are bad guys for doing it. Same with steroids. I didn't think it made you a bad person. You made a poor decision. Doesn't mean you're a bad guy. You know, we always had that conversation about, oh, you hate Barry Bonds because he used steroids. No. I hate him because he was a creep. He was an absolute jerk. Had nothing to do with his steroid use. But same thing with this. So, you know, Mariners got a lot of good guys on this roster. Does that mean they're above it? No. I don't know who did or who didn't. Maybe it's Graveman. Maybe, you know, a guy throwing that hard and keeping guys off balance like that. I don't know. I'm not sure his spin rate and how that's changed at all for him. But, yeah, I don't really put it above anybody who's competing at that level. Let's take two.
Well, the Texans came out and announced today that they are canceling their mandatory mini camp because of strong turnout at OTAs. But here's another interesting byproduct of that. No player now, including Deshaun Watson, who probably wasn't going to show up, can be fined for missing what had been a mandatory event because they're not having it.
Yeah, I guess a break for him. I saw a story today, Dave, that who was the player? There's a player who said flat out that Deshaun wants to play for the Denver Broncos. So who's going to get there first, Deshaun or Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which one's more unlikely. I don't know what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson. I kind of read it as a move by the Texans to kind of help out Deshaun Watson, you know, so now he can't be fined, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that maybe they feel like the new coach down there, the guy that came from Baltimore, maybe he is trying to help him out and, you know, kind of, you know, take some pressure off of him and not take any money out of his pocket. That one is a weird one. We haven't talked about it in a long time. All that stuff was coming out a few months ago. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Deshaun Watson, but who's more likely in Denver first? Gosh, I guess I would say Deshaun Watson.
We have some number news. LeBron is switching jersey numbers from number 23 back to number 6. We'll cue your guy, Skip Bayless. He's going to say he can't handle the pressure of wearing number 23. MJ's better. Also, the Titans announced that Julio Jones will wear number 2 instead of number 11.
Wait, did Skip say that? Or
no,
you're
no.
Just anticipating
you know that's what he's going to say, right? I'm
yeah,
anticipating
he's,
that.
He's an imbecile. That's why he'll say something like that. He's a complete stooge. Okay, it's just more jersey sales. I mean, I don't know. Is it that big a deal? Is there something? But did he? I didn't see the story on LeBron, so I don't know what his reasoning is for switching numbers. He's had a boatload of success, a number of championships, a number of trips to the finals. So I don't know that he's unlucky or that he needs to switch numbers in order to finally find his way to a championship. That's not part of his story.
I like the Julio Jones number 2. That's cool. I don't mind it for like DBs and receivers. I don't like it with the linemen, I got to admit.
What if he wanted to wear number 74?
Yeah, that would just slow him down.
Yeah, that's too much.
Dude, immediately lose a tenth off of his 40 time.
Of course he would. Of course he would. Hey, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, we get a chance to speak to the best in the business. Mike Blowers will join us here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody. We do it every week here with Wyman and Bob. Bring in the best color analyst in the business for a conversation. A little shorter conversation because of an abbreviated show today before we turn you over to the Mariners pregame show. But you know him. You love him. He joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. He is Mike Blowers. Mike, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss in a short amount of time here, so I want to get to a couple of different things. Just a quick thought from you on what we saw out of Marco Gonzalez yesterday. It was the first start was so promising. It looked like he didn't miss a moment, even though he missed the entire month of May. He had not pitched and comes back super efficient in that first start. Yesterday, for whatever reason, the Tigers are problematic. They are 10 games under 500. You feel like this is a team they should beat, but had some trouble with them yesterday. What did you see from him?
Yeah, I thought the first inning he gave up 3 of the 4 runs, and in the first inning he was in the middle of the plate. That's something that we saw earlier in the year when he was having some issues. I was encouraged by the start because he was able to come back out and correct that. He wasn't as efficient as he was in his first outing, that's for sure, but I thought it was really important for him to have a couple of clean innings. The third and the fourth were innings that I wanted to see from him. So he finished up strong. He was able to get to 71 pitches. Next time out, he's probably going to be in that 85 to 90, depending on how much traffic he has out there, which hopefully isn't much. Get him through 6 innings, and then I think after that, the gloves are off and he's off to the races, because I know he's chomping at the bit too. But I just thought he was just in the middle of the plate, and they were really aggressive. You know, when you have a team that has struggled and they're a younger team, kind of like the Mariners, they're going to be aggressive, especially if there's a veteran pitcher out there, and it cost him in that first. But I, after that, I thought he was fine.
Mike, I heard the team got in at 5 a.m. Boy, I bet you really miss traveling with the team, huh?
That is so brutal, man. I can't even begin to tell you. Because you know what they do? They tell you, well, it's an off day. Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, you feel terrible the next day, and you're just trying to get the cobwebs out and get yourself back together. But that's part of the business, and I don't miss that at all. So it's been nice to have a little bit of time at home. Eventually that'll change again. But for the guys, it's pretty tough for the guys, especially if you're dealing with injuries and stuff. Yeah, as you know, being on a plane for a period of time when you have aches and pains isn't fun, and then all of a sudden you kind of your clock gets messed up with that time. So I feel for him on that.
Yeah. Well, hey, we're talking about Kyle Seager a little bit. It's kind of funny during the broadcast you were talking. I don't remember him being that chatty. Kyle Seager's not really, which is fine. He's not, you know, a media guy necessarily, but I didn't realize that he had that habit of pretty much talking to anybody who will listen to him, it seems like. It's kind of funny.
He's absolutely that guy. Kyle, you know, he's one of the funniest guys you'll be around. He has a dry sense of humor, and he will pick at anybody about anything. He takes it really well, too. But for whatever reason, you wouldn't guess it, like you were saying, as far as the media goes, but he is as social as anybody I've been around. And it took me a couple of years to try to figure him out. I didn't really get it, but I think once I was around more and he got more comfortable being a big leaguer, then it was fine. But it cracks me up, because I was never that way. I could, you know, I would get my highs and hellos out of the way, and then after that, I was concentrating on the game. But for Kyle, it seems to relax him, and he's been that way from day one. So he hasn't changed anything over 10 years.
Well, and I was telling Dave when he brought that up that perhaps Kyle could sit down and get chatty with Tim Laker, because he's scuffling at the plate, to say the least, hitting .214. And that's a bit of a joke. I mean, he's a guy who's been, you know, one of their more productive players, but he's having a hard go right now. What are you seeing from him at the plate? Because it feels like the off-speed stuff has really, he's not seeing it. He's just, that seems to be the go-to pitch for the pitcher that he may be facing that day to really get him to chase.
Yeah, especially from the left side, right? I mean, that's been kind of what I've been seeing too. The righties, more change-ups, I think. Lefties, it's more the breaking ball, especially if they have a slider. That's what they're using right now. And I think, you know, I thought about this a lot last night, and just watching him go about his business and just thinking about the season as a whole. And he's done such a good job hitting with runners in scoring position. His power numbers are fine, but the average is down, as you said. And I go back to the beginning of the year when he was hitting the ball hard and not having a lot to show for it. And then his luck changed, and he started picking up some base hits, because, you know, that's eventually going to happen when you're hitting it hard. And now I think it's gone the other way, to where he's been scuffling, in my mind, for the last couple of weeks, really. And it looks to me, to your point, that he's just kind of in between. He had a fastball last night that he pulled, I don't know, it seemed like it was 50 feet foul. And that to me tells me that, you know, he's really not seeing in the ball and trusting his hands. He's trying to think his way through ABs, and something's out of whack mechanically for him. And that's what a veteran guy will do. I expect he'll get back on track. But right now he's just kind of in between on everything. And you're right about the breaking ball, but hopefully, if he can get back to the middle of the field, because he hasn't been there, I think, in the last 10 days, call it. If he gets back to that point, that's when you'll see him take off. So if you see, hopefully it's tonight, and he gets a couple of base hits or hits the ball hard the other way a couple of times, and that's when he'll be back on track. And as a hitter, especially when you've been around, you get to a certain point to where mechanically you're out of whack. You know that. You understand that. You know you're not recognizing pitches. And so you try to help it along by cheating. And eventually he'll get back to where he's just going to have to trust his hands and let the ball travel and let it get deeper in the zone, because that's the only way you're going to start picking up the breaking ball again. And he's aware of that. You just have to be able to trust the process of it. And like I said, hopefully that's the case tonight.
Hey, Mike, the word on J.P. Crawford coming out of spring training was that he wasn't really hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball pretty hard and pretty often right now. What do you make of the tear that he's been on lately?
Yeah, he's fun for me to watch, because I look at him and I watch his game. And what he's trying to do and what he's able to do offensively right now. And it feels like it's a little bit of a throwback, right? Like, he's not worried about launch angle and trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark, although he has a few homers now. He's hitting the ball all over the field. I think his decisions at the plate have been terrific. If last night he ends up punching out on three pitches and every single one of them were borderline, I don't worry about that. But I just love the way he just sprays it around. And when he gets down in the count, he's going to fight you. And he's one of those guys, for a pitcher, they hate guys like that because they just want to put guys away. All of a sudden they got him 0-2, 1-2, and you think you have it. And all of a sudden he just starts fouling pitch after pitch after pitch off. And eventually you may get it, but he also may get a base hit. But they hate wasting 8-9 pitches in that bat, especially when they get out in front early. And he's that guy in their lineup right now. He's at the top of the order. He gets on base a ton. It's been fun to watch. We'll see how long this can last for him. He's been doing it for an extended period of time now, too, which is encouraging, I think, for all of us. But, you know, it's one of those things where he's also going to go through 162 for the first time. So we'll see where he's at and the ebb and flow of this season for him and where that goes. But I have a feeling that he's going to stick fairly consistent just because of the approach that he has, which, again, is more middle of the field and not try to do too much at the plate.
Hey, Mike, what's the change that you see in Taylor Trammell? I think he's been back, what, 7 games, I believe, and hitting .280 since he's been back. I mean, he's making some nice solid contact even on some of the outs, you know, and I know we look at the contact even if it results in an out, and it feels like he's squaring it up more. He's certainly not striking out at the pace that he was. What is there an obvious change to his mechanics or his approach as far as you can see?
I think the only thing for me, and I realized this, I didn't even notice it at first, but from talking to him, and that is he's lowered his hands just a little bit. That's a mechanical change for him, and he even talked about it, saying that most people wouldn't see it right away, but to him it feels like it's a big move on his part, which I get that. When you start tinkering with things like that, it to most people it doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you're hitting every day, some of those little slight moves make a big difference to you. I think by doing that, it's just kind of relaxed him a little bit more. So I like that part of it. But I also think, guys, I think it's also part of this process that we've talked about. You know, he came up, he made the big jump, makes a team out of spring training, and is really struggling along the way, had some moments that were nice, continued to play pretty good defense overall, but then he just started swinging and missing, and the league went to work on him. They found out some things about him. He put some pressure on himself, and he ended up getting sent to AAA. And then all of a sudden he goes down to AAA, and he feels like, well, I just saw the best in the world, so I know I can handle these guys. I know there's some things that they want me to work on, and I'm going to do that. But I think it really came full circle. The thing that he said that I liked the most when he came back, and I think it was his second day back, is he said, I made up my mind that I can play there, and I just need to be myself and not try to do what everybody else wants me to do, and that's what I'm going to do. And I was like, boom, there it is. That's the light. And he's just run with it. So, you know, even on days when he doesn't pick up a hit, the quality of his at-bats are better. It doesn't mean he's a finished product. He's far from it. But you can see the amount of talent this young man has. And when he really gets it going, I think there's a chance he could be pretty special when you consider how young he really is and how inexperienced he is. But he's been making adjustments, which I think is the most encouraging thing. And his at-bats are much better.
He is Mike Blowers, the best in the business, joining us every week. And again, abbreviated conversation this week because we got Mariner baseball coming up. But Mike, we'll get back to a full-length conversation next week. As always, we appreciate it.
Pleasure talking to you guys.
All right, there you go, Mike Blowers. We're going to come back, talk some Seahawks football. Jordan Brooks offering some potential insight on KJ Wright and his future. We'll let you hear what he had to say next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton. Stelton.
Got the Mariners pregame show coming up at the top of the hour. Game two of their series with the Tigers in Detroit coming your way. Chris Flexen will be on the hill for the Mariners. See if he can get them back into the win column. By the way, people chiming in, Dave, when you asked the question about, well, do you think Mariners pitchers use spider tack? Have they been cheating like these other guys? And yeah. I resisted the obvious, but the texters did not, saying, well, if they are cheating, they're really bad at it because it's not helping. They're not winning. This is not anything that's, reached playoff potential because of these aids that some players are choosing to use.
Do you want to be a bad cheater? I mean, isn't that a good thing? Or
if you cheat, you better win.
You're going to cheat, you might as well do it right.
Yes. If you're cheating and losing, that's terrible. Terrible. Switching our attention to the Seahawks, Jordan Brooks was speaking with the media yesterday, talked about a couple of different things, and just gave his thoughts on KJ Wright here and just the bar that he set as a player, as a person. And we all know this, and obviously Jordan Brooks acknowledging that in cut number three.
I wouldn't say any pressure, but it's definitely shoes to fill. KJ had an outstanding career here. You know, he set the bar high for sure. And So it's definitely no slack here. So just ready to get in and prove that I can do this.
Certainly sounds past tense, doesn't it? Shoes to fill, great career here. Just you hear that and you start parsing it going, wow, what is that? Does that really mean it's over? What does that mean?
I know. I wonder if KJ would retire or if he wants to still play somewhere else. If I was anywhere near around him, you know, one of his inner circle, I'd tell him, keep going, man. He has played his best football the last 2 years in his 30s. So, and I think that was kind of making it sound like maybe Jordan Brooks was going to be the replacement. I thought maybe some people might think that. I don't think so. I think, you know, Jordan Brooks is a second level guy, although that's where, you know, KJ used to play. Used to play at the Will up, stacked next to Bobby. But this year he's up more on the line of scrimmage. Just he had less tackles. You know, he had 86 tackles as opposed to 132 last year. But he had two sacks and an interception with an asterisk because he could have had like three interceptions.
Yeah.
But yeah, the year before that he had three. So, I mean, he's been very productive. I don't know. I'm still holding out hope that they can get KJ in here for a reasonable amount or something that, you know, maybe it can be incentive laden contract. You know, I think the rookie for 10 years and beyond is $1.05 million. Clayton always tells us. So if you could put in, you know, a couple $1 million there for incentives, whether it's interceptions, wins, wins in the division, things like that. You know, maybe you could get to make it palatable for KJ to come back here, because I just love to have him, man.
Yeah, and Clayton says they've got somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 million currently, so we'll see where they choose to spend that. Cut number four, Brooks talking about the fact that he and KJ are in touch and that he was just a massive help to him last season.
Yeah, I talked to him a couple of times over the off season. We just talk about regular day life. Nothing too crazy, but like I said, he was a big help for me in my first year, coming in and kind of just pulling me to the side whenever he could and just giving me tips on whatever we need to go over in the playbook or just tips about life. So he was a big, you know, a help for me year one for sure.
That's why I want him to coach, Dave. I want him to be a coach. I don't know if he wants to, and you always talk about the hours and how, you know, compared to what they make as players, it's not even comparable financially speaking, but I'm hoping he's just got that love of the game, that he's just got to be around it, because all you ever heard outside of who he was as a player was he knew everybody's job. He knew the responsibilities of everybody's position out there, and a lot of guys would check with him on the field, you know, right before the snap. He knew where to be, where you should be. He just seemed to have that mind.
Yeah, well, then, you know, you got Deshaun Shedd out there coaching now, by the way, and then, you know, Aaron Curry, they lost Nick Sorensen, but I'm just, you know, naming some ex-players that are coaching now, and I, you know, was talking about how that number is kind of dwindling, but, you know, for a guy like KJ who played that long, has plenty of cheddar, I think he's probably, you know, going to take a couple of years off at least, but let's stop talking about him in the past tense. we still don't know, we still, you know, are holding out hope that he'll be back. I would say this, though, I would seriously believe that if they were bringing KJ back, that Cody Barton would be going on the trading block. I think that's you've got an excess there. I mean, I'd be thrilled if it was KJ, Bobby, and Jordan Brooks. You know, and I think those are the three best. But I do think that that Cody Barton's a starter. Also, I'd like to see Ben Burkervin get started. He looked really good last year. Both those guys, him and Cody, had great years on special teams. And, you know, I just liked a few of the things. We didn't see a lot, but the part that we did see, I liked. It's the same thing with Jordan Brooks. And that's where people are like, oh, well, I don't really see it. Like, I'm looking at every play from these guys. And, you know, sometimes they don't have the stats and stuff like that. But if you look at what they're doing, just the little things, you know, it's really good stuff out of Cody, BBK, and especially Jordan Brooks.
Well, and it feels like the Seahawks may be in agreement that you know, his time is come and gone. I mean, just to hear Brooks say it's shoes to fill, things like that, maybe they believe Cody's the guy moving forward, because they've certainly made no attempt, as far as we've heard, to bring KJ back, and what would seem to be at a reduced rate from what he was expecting, unless he's holding firm to whatever number he's got in mind, which doesn't seem like it's going to come from anywhere. So I don't know what the future holds. Hopefully they bring him back on some reduced rate and he can finish out his career here. All right, that does it for us. I want to thank our guest Mike Blowers for joining us on the program. If you missed anything from today's show or any day, just head to 710sports.com and click the podcast tab. Scroll down to our picture and click on that. And anything you missed is waiting there for you each and every day. Mariners and Tigers Game 2 coming your way next. We're back tomorrow with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.